Yo, 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 Thought Warriors.
What is up? Our learning is on. It's I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Going to the Lakers game last night. Tell us how it was.
I had a lot of fun.
I bet you did.
I've never sat courtside at the Lakers game.
You sat courtside last night.
It's the feet on the floor.
Nigger.
Why?
Oh, nigger.
It was, and I felt so bad because it was the Lakers versus the Heat. And you know the Heat is Brian's favorite team. But I was invited. They weren't my tickets. So what am I supposed to do? Say no?
Oh, my God!
Say no because
this
it
is
was
the peak. No, fuck that. Hold on.
I'm supposed to say no?
I didn't know this. Wait a minute.
I was invited.
Wait a second. I was sure.
That I went with Brian?
That you went. When I saw it was a Lakers Heat, I was sure. And I knew you were at the game. I was sure that you went with Brian.
Couldn't take Brian.
Donnie, jump in. And keep it real, Donnie. Donnie, yeah.
Donnie,
I don't need the bullshit.
No, Ashley, too.
Donnie, I don't need the... I swear to God, I didn't know this until just now.
I know you didn't know.
Swear
I know
to God.
You didn't know.
Donnie, jump in.
So, was there no way that you could have got Brian there? There was nothing
I was invited.
Done?
My friend invited me to the game. There were two seats. Hers and a plus one. Would you turn... Would you, Donnie, Detroit Pistons, courtside, somebody invites you?
That's wrong. You're doing it the opposite way.
Why?
You're doing it the opposite way.
Oh, because he's the big fan.
Because he's the
okay,
fan.
Your
so,
wife,
so
Donnie.
If Donnie's wife.
Your
the
wife,
thing
Donnie,
is, if Donnie's
is
wife.
Is she a sports fan?
Oh, my God.
She is. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
If your wife gets invited to sit courtside at a Detroit Pistons game, or, you know, you're in Atlanta. At a Hawks game that are playing the Detroit Pistons. That's more like how it is.
And you're not a Laker fan, mm-hmm. So let's put this on.
But I'm a sports fan.
Let's put this on wax.
I'm a sports
you're
fan,
not a
right.
Laker fan.
She's a sports fan, okay? Maybe she's not a Detroit. Maybe she is a fan. Whatever. She's a sports fan.
Brian, I feel you,
she
dog.
Gets invited to
you,
the
G.
game court side.
I feel you, G.
Is she supposed
Brian,
to turn
me.
It down just because you're a fan? You're a super fan?
No. See, she, I'm not going to hold her back. From having a good time, I'm not
and
gonna hold her back.
Good,
from
and that's
a
good and that's a good man, Savannah.
Let me tell
that's
you.
A good
let
man.
Me tell you what should have happened. Let me tell you what should have happened.
What?
Brian should have gone with your friend.
Wow! So everybody could say Brian was on a date courtside at the game. It's
either
a woman,
or,
mind you. It was a woman.
Either that, or it was a woman. See,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
It's a woman.
Okay, so like, so I didn't. I wasn't listening to that part. So this makes it a little
but
bit.
But if it was like my best guy friend invited me to the game, I'm supposed to not go?
If it, let's say that it was your best guy friend. Let's say that it was your best guy friend inviting you to the game.
Okay.
Okay. Whoever. I've met guy friends that you've had. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
You definitely should have let Brian go if it was his team playing. If it's the Heat playing when they come to L.A., this is what I'm talking about.
I feel nothing.
This is what I'm talking about.
I had a
Ashley,
good time.
Ashley?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I agree with you, Van. If it,
boom!
If it's like a guy friend.
Ashley? Oh, she said if it's a guy friend.
If it's a guy friend, then you gotta let your husband go. But since it was your girlfriend then,
if my
it's all
best
good.
Friend...
What did Brian say?
I said, Brian, because my little sister's still in town, too. And so that was like, oh, you know, do you mind if I go? You're in town. I'm going to go to this game, blah, blah. And there's reasons behind why I went with this friend. I'm not going to tell her business. But anyways, no, like she's going through something. And so like I was there to like support her anyways.
At the Laker game, nigga?
She needed to get out.
Yeah, I didn't like it's, she needed to get out. It's like, yeah, it's like y'all go to the park. Wasn't that what ladies
she
do?
She needed to.
They go walk
ooh,
on the beach.
Sexist. Come wait, on, well, keep going. We go for long walks.
I've seen these
women
commercials.
Be shopping.
We can't
women
go
be
to
shopping.
Shopping. Women be shopping.
We can't go to sport. We can't go enjoy a game.
Well, you said she was going through something.
She
so
is.
When I see,
so we,
like,
so I went to go have. A, I went to go
watched,
out with her.
Waiting
she
to exhale.
Get out.
I watched the Joy Luck Club. I watched Practical Magic. I've seen all of these movies. I ain't never seen women.
Well, that's because the industry's sexist.
I've never seen women getting over their issues at the Lakers.
They
game.
Go do their hobbies. They go have a good time. A friend gave her the tickets and was like, "Do you invite someone?"
Ever seen girlfriends?
Yes.
Ever seen them at the Lakers game? Ever see Sex in the City? Did they go to the Laker game? You ever see Girls? Laker game? Insecure? Laker game? What I'm telling you right now is
I'm a modern day woman.
You're a modern woman. I'm not chill. Hey, chill.
No, you chill.
Oh, you chill.
You chill.
No, chill. Chill.
Listen.
All I'm saying is, Brian, I'm
like
here for you.
I like to unwind.
Me and Brian
and relax
going to a Laker game. Hold
at
on
a Lakers
quick.
Game.
I'm about to look it up right now. Me and Brian, I'm taking Brian to the
Make
Lakers
Make sure
game.
You get him courtside.
Okay, cool. Well, nigga, what? Like, I ain't got money, nigga? The fuck?
Okay, nobody's saying you don't have money.
Hold on. Let's see. I'm so mad for Brian right now.
I'm calling Brian.
I'm so mad for Brian right now. What you think he's going to say? What do you think he's going to say? Why would you call him right now?
Hi, babe.
You're on speakerphone and you're on the podcast. Brian?
Oh, shit.
Brian, I want you to keep it all the way real, too, G. I want you to keep it all the way real.
Van is very upset on your behalf that I went to the Lakers Heat game, Heat being your favorite team, courtside, and didn't give you the ticket. How do you feel about that? Were you upset?
I mean, I was a little salty, but here's the deal.
Ow!
Let him explain. Let him explain. Let him explain.
Here's how I rationalize that, though. If she would have given the ticket to me, then I would have gone with her girlfriend. So it's like, I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? So it only made sense since her girlfriend got the ticket that she took Rachel and whatever. I was okay with it.
Let me ask you this. If I took, shout out to Mark Simmons, if my best guy friend had the ticket and said, Rachel, I got a ticket to the game, and he and I went, would you feel like you should have that ticket?
I mean, if it was a guy, I think I would be more inclined to go. And that way, me and Mark can bond. He knows you already.
Y'all can bond? Have you tried to take Mark to dinner so y'all can bond?
See? Here we go. Here's Brian.
Oh, but now that it's a courtside game, you want to bond?
He doesn't even live here. So
exactly.
That wouldn't even be a situation. But if it was, I would want to go more with a guy. I don't know.
Brian, when is your birthday?
Okay, Van's very upset.
When is your birthday?
It's coming up soon.
When?
February 15th.
Brian, I'm looking at February 7th right now. The Oklahoma City Thunder are playing the Los Angeles Lakers. Okay.
He's getting you
there
courtside.
Are two courtside tickets available right now.
How much?
They're $7,600 each.
Oh, but you got money, as you said. You
got money.
I
might have to make it happen for us, Brian. I'm not going to lie. I might have to, you know what? I want to start a GoFundMe for the Thought Warriors to send Brian courtside. Like, literally, Brian, last night, I knew she was at the game because a friend of mine was there. She saw her. But I did not know that Rachel was courtside at the Heat game. But I thought y'all went together because it's the Heat. What the fuck?
No, listen, that stung when she told me that she had my ticket. And it just so happened to be my hometown team. I was a little salty, I'm not going to lie. But then I thought about it, I was like, she didn't even get the tickets. If she would have gotten the tickets,
I would have taken them.
Now I'm upset.
I said, Brian, I was like, when he got tickets to the Lakers game courtside, and he goes, oh, who are they playing? Who are they playing? And I just looked at him.
They're playing Jimmy Butler.
And he goes, I just looked at the schedule. I said, I know, it stings.
They playing Bam Adebayo. They playing Tyler Hero. Okay?
Kyle Lowry.
They playing Duncan Robinson, Kyle Lowry. That's what they playing. Duncan
didn't play
last night? The niggas lost without LeBron and AD. Brian,
it was a good game.
Y'all got
Sorry, man.
Okay.
We got it. It was a good game. All right.
Talk to you later.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Exactly. You caught, and then you cost the Heat a dub.
It was a nothing. It didn't count for anything. Both of them are sorry right now. Bye.
You know what's crazy, man? I just look at that. I think about B. You know, Brian. You at the
$7,600. Like, have fun.
You at the. I might do that shit, to be real with you.
Not like, for OKC. Come on, if you want to spend money.
Nigga, OKC is going to be the only one I could afford. What are you talking about?
You could throw a couple extra thousand on it and get a better game.
Let's see. Let's see.
Dallas would be fun.
Let's see. Let's see.
You know, LeBron's not playing, so you might be able to get it cheaper than you think.
All right, so you say you want to look at tickets that aren't like OKC, because I looked at, because see, once again, I'm being like economical. I'm being practical.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Why not?
Let's see Ja Morant. Ja Morant.
Okay, let's go see Memphis.
Let's see Ja Morant. Two tickets right now. Ja Morant. Memphis is coming to town. Let's do this thing on the StubHub app. Look it up right now. $9,000.
You got it? You're rich. $9,000.
So
I don't like when people say the word bucks.
You don't like when, why?
I don't like bucks. I don't know. Just lands wrong. Bucks.
Bucks. You don't like that shit? $9,000.
Like
that did sound kind of bad what I said about ladies. Not really.
Be you.
Is it? But Donnie, be you. Donnie, is that not a slight point that like is when I look at, I never heard my mom. My mom loves sports. I never heard my mom go, yo, let's kick it. Let's go to the Saints game and kick it.
But I do that.
Yeah, you do. Because you love sports. That's tough. That's a tough one for Brian. You heard the pain in his voice. He was at home counting his abs over and over and over again, just thinking, what the fuck, man? Probably watching the broadcast.
He was at work.
Probably watching the broadcast.
He was at work. And what made it worse? This is not funny. We have a mutual friend. And for some reason, but Brian met her first. Mm. And she works. She's a fantastic job at the Lakers. And so she was like, I think I just saw Rachel. Give me her info so we can go to the patio.
Oh,
and it's a
God.
Section.
Rachel.
And then I had a great time.
It's Rachel. And then Rachel, they go to the patio. It's Rachel, Magic Johnson, Jack Nicholson, Leonardo DiCaprio. They're all over there chilling.
There were actors. There were former
Of course
players.
There were. Of course. It's the Laker game. Of course there were. You're down there next
time.
To fucking Zoe Kravitz.
I haven't even shown him my picture where I'm wearing. I got a ring on every finger where I'm wearing five rings.
How did you get five rings? How did you get the Lakers rings on?
I was around people who had championship rings.
And they let you wear the rings?
Yeah, I took a picture. You want to see? Donnie, I'll send it to you so you can post it up on the YouTube.
So wait, how did you get around rings? People had rings? Who had rings? Did you fucking hanging out with Jeannie Buss?
Like, she was not there. Jeannie was not there. I made it happen.
You did make it happen.
Look at this.
Oh my, no. Hell no. Brian.
Look at this.
Look, by the way, that picture is so messy. That's so messy. You're looking at like you. That's like a fuck 'em girl face.
I think
that you
that's
got
when
on.
They beat Miami.
Yeah, you got a fuck 'em.
I think one of these rings is
the from 2020.
Yeah,
you got a fuck 'em girl face on. You like fuck 'em girl. Fuck 'em.
Fuck 'em.
Fuck 'em girl.
Fuck 'em girl. Fuck 'em.
That's great. But you have fun. Who is that?
That's Whitney. Yes, Whitney. You met her.
Yeah,
that's who's
terrible at taboo. We're terrible at taboo. Like one of the worst taboo players. Just up there froze. She froze.
And then when I got on her, you were like, stop.
Yeah.
She tried. You were super encouraging. And now you're talking shit about her on the podcast.
Okay, guys, we are going to cut the pleasantries short. We gave you pleasantries right there. We gave you Brian. You guys should be cool.
Yeah.
I do want to say something before we move on to what is a packed show. We have two interviews coming up. One is with Joshua Cooper, who is
Dr.
Joshua Cooper, who's a cardiac electrophysiologist at the university, at Temple University, should I say. He's going to talk to us a little bit about DeMar Hamlin, what happened, his future, what might have happened because details are still sketchy, his future, and what his recovery might look like. We have another guest, Aaron Rupar, who is going to help us break down the comical and wacky goings on in Washington with the farce that is the House vote to elect or not elect Kevin McCarthy as House Speaker. Before we get to that, I want to send my condolences to the families of two people. Barbara Walters passed away. Legendary broadcaster. Everybody knows the name. She was 93 years old, a life well lived, 60 plus years, catapulted in part by her coverage of President John F. Kennedy's assassination. You are a woman in broadcasting. What did Barbara Walters mean to you?
I mean, Barbara Walters opened up so many doors. There's not one person who's in this industry who considers themselves a reporter, a journalist, a correspondent that can't credit Barbara Walters as having some type of influence over their career. As early as I can remember turning on TV and watching a woman conduct an interview, I mean, it was Barbara Walters. Mm-hmm. You know, I was young. Well, you know, there's only so many things we could watch. I was young watching mm-hmm. 2020.
Sure.
The 10 most fascinating people. You looked forward to that. Who was Barbara Walters going to deem as fascinating this year? So The View, a show that I love, is a show that was created by Barbara Walters, historic, giving women an opportunity to have their voice and all their voices heard, I should say, their opinions heard, their opinions mattered. And all these years since it started, it's the number one daytime show of women talking about politics and entertainment and current affairs. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's a hot seat. People want to get on. That came from the mind of Barbara Walters. So yeah, she's just meant so much. She means so much still to so many people. And that was marked by her last episode on The View, when they had
I saw that.
Female journalists from every network come there in a long line to give her a hug and to congratulate her on this legendary career and say what she means to them. And nobody else could do that but Barbara Walters.
A lot of her interviewing tactics I learned, I tried to recreate them. Barbara was right to the point.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Why?
She was, why? That's why? So key to
you
ask.
You say in your song, suck dick from the back, give him a heart attack. What does that mean? She would go right to the source of it.
Yeah.
Brilliant interview with Donald Trump. Held his feet to the fire. You would have thought the interview was 4 years ago. When you watch it in 1989, you see all the makings of a demagogue. Brilliant interview with Sean Connery, still breathtaking what Sean Connery said in the interview. Monica Lewinsky, Michael Jackson, obviously Oprah. So many different people that she's talked to over the years. And not without some controversy.
Sure.
Not without some controversy. She talked about later in the career about her style and about how sometimes she was less than sensitive to what people might have been going through or getting to the center of somebody. But, you know, when somebody is a trailblazer to that degree, you have to take time out and respect their memory. Somebody else who passed away is a woman by the name of Lola Chantrell Mitchell, better known as Gangsta Boo. She's a former member of the 3-6 Mafia. When I say someone else, I want to make sure that I don't paint it in any way as somebody less important.
Mm-hmm.
I knew this woman. She was somebody who, you know, when I came to Los Angeles, I would see her around, and me being a Southern rap fan, a star like her, the female voice of one of the most important groups in hip hop history to me, and not just a female voice, a strong female voice, a direct. She influenced everything from the subject material to the cadence of a lot of the female rappers I hear now. Just an amazing musician and a great person. We weren't best friends, but she was somebody who, when I met her, I would see her out. She texts me every now and again. I text her back. We would talk. And it just felt so dope for me to be talking to Gangsta Boo. Just knowing that that was somebody I had listened to when I was 15, 16 years old. Warm, inviting, cordial, like amazingly real living legend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she passed away at 43. There's no cause of death yet. To everyone who loved Lola and cared about her, to the entire hip hop community, to everybody, to, you know, DJ Paul, to all the other brothers that I've been able to meet, you know, since I've been out here, who don't have any clue how much their music meant to so many people and how we rocked to it for so long. I offer my sincerest condolences and to her family and to really the entire city of Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
I offer my sincerest and deepest condolences. Felt gutted when I heard this news.
Yeah.
Gutted when I heard this news. So rest in peace to Lola, man. It's crazy.
And I, at 43, is so young.
Yeah.
So young. I would encourage our listeners, if you're not familiar with Gangsta Boo's music, maybe this is the first time you've heard of her, I think a really good way to honor her, especially because I love this quote that Zani put in the rundown where she says that I have to admit respectfully and humbly that I am the blueprint. I hear my cadence in a lot of men and female rappers.
Absolutely.
And she talks about how she used to run away from it. And she said, I used to didn't want to even give myself flowers because I've been so low key and humble, which you spoke to. But she's like, but I'm on some fuck that shit is what she said. And she said, it's time to claim what's mine. I'm one of the main bitches. So I think that one of the best ways to honor her is to go listen to her music, go see what she meant to so many people like Van. And how she influenced music, especially rap in the South.
So I want to say something else about that period. You could say Gangsta Boo was underrated because maybe people didn't give her flowers when she was here. And that's definitely true. But I think that's true for rap artists prior to this current crop, period, from the city of Memphis. When we talk about important cities in rap, we talk about Atlanta, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about New Orleans, of course, mm-hmm. Cash Money and what they was doing. We talk about
Houston,
of course. Houston was coming with it. We talk about Miami, talk about New York. I'm from Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge has an amazing crop of hip-hop artists that have popped up over the last 10 years. Long before that, shout out MC Nero. Shout out to Youngbleed, you know, the Concentration Camp, CeeLo, Max Minnelli, all of those guys, Box, Royale, everybody that was doing their thing in Baton Rouge. But Memphis, man, there was a time in my life where I was listening to so much rap that was coming straight out of Memphis.
You don't think Memphis gets it?
Not to me, bruh. Like, to me, when I think about, I don't hear people talk enough about A Ball and MJG.
It's not mainstream. But
those are, like, that's incredible classic music. They don't talk enough about Hypnotized Minds. They don't talk enough about what was going on at Suave House. They don't talk enough about, to me, about Memphis and what was happening in Memphis and how a lot of the movements, right, that ended up being associated with other places. Mm-hmm. Like, when you hear the term crunk, what city do you think of?
I don't even know what city I think of. Is that Memphis?
Most people would think of Atlanta. Memphis kind of started that crunk shit. Mm. Memphis kind of is so much innovation. They were so far to, when you think about the production from Juicy J and them, there were so many sounds, so much shit that was ahead of its time coming from there, right? And you know, she was a big part of that. But, you know, I hope and I'm glad to see that Memphis has had a resurgence or it's been getting its due. Unfortunately, you know,
we lost Dolph.
Pusheisty is having some legal problems, you know, but Glorilla's here. Gotti is here. There's still a lot of people coming out of Memphis mm-hmm. doing their thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Key Glock, mm-hmm. a lot of those people. But, yo, Memphis always been one of the dopest places for hip-hop music, period, since I've been listening to it, especially in the South, you know what I mean? My man Gino used to put me on stuff, even, you know, some of the stuff that just would shock me when I would just listen to the 3-6 Mafia, and it was Lord Infamous, just lick my butt, like doing
well,
all this.
I mean,
like,
slob on my knob. Slob on my knob.
Like, on like all of that, and Gangsta Boo was right there, but I want to make sure people give Memphis their credit, because I think...
Maybe because, do you think because people think of Memphis in the blues?
I don't know.
I think of Memphis because I'm from the South and so many of my like Texas rappers would do collaborations with Memphis rappers, which is what put me on the scene to Memphis rappers. So I guess I'm just in a bubble and I think of it that way. But I do wonder if it's because Memphis and the blues, they don't necessarily think of it in the rap. Maybe they just didn't cross over to the mainstream. You know, like, I don't know if a lot of people would know who UGK was if, you know, they say Jay-Z hadn't come down and done.
If Jay-Z hadn't come down
they
and done
that,
Big
there's
Pimpin,
an argument. There's an argument about that.
I mean, I'm sure for the MTV generation, that Hov jumping on Big Pimpin was huge for UGK.
To cross a crossover.
I'm not denying that, but God damn, it's hard for me to believe that you're a rap fan and you don't know who UGK is, man. It's just...
I agree.
I get it, man. I get it, but it's just, it's hard for me with the classic music that they were putting out.
I think there's levels of fandom.
Of course, I know. And also, I'm from the South, so I'm biased. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm biased.
Like, I'm not going to know, like rappers from the Bay the same way that I'm going to know rappers from the South. But you're going
to know the rappers from the Bay that you need to know. Like, I'm going to know Mac Maul. You know what I mean? I'm going to know Mac Dre. I'm going to know the rappers. You don't know any of those guys?
See what I'm saying? So see what I'm saying? But I'm making an argument for the other side that I heavily know Southern rappers because it was so a part of the culture that I grew up in the South. But I don't know the what's equivalent to the Bay for those rappers. I don't know them.
Yeah, but I mean,
you know,
I mean,
yeah, it's like but you
know,
Too Short E40.
You know those guys. You know Too Short E40. But the Bay, once again. I could honest, and I'm not people that hear me on it, they think that I feel like hip hop is too East Coast biased, and you know, I want to move on because we got some, but like even that, do you know how much shit that people say and how much of the way people talk in hip hop and rap right now, how much of the sounds, do you know how much Bay Area rap has influenced hip hop?
I don't doubt it.
Like Bay Area, do you know how much Bay Area rap? And it's just, okay, I'm gonna give you that Solo Nights, though. I'm gonna give you that Richie Rich seasoned veteran.
Give it to me.
I'm gonna give you, like, this great, it's great music.
I believe it.
All right. Another side of this break, the big deal of the day, which is, of course, the really scary, harrowing scene that took place in the NFL earlier this week with Damar Hamlin.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Okay, good news to report. Damar Hamlin, who is, of course, a Buffalo Bills safety, who collapsed on the field during a game against the Cincinnati Bengals, is doing better. He is awake right now. He's holding hands with his family. We are recording this on a Thursday. I want to make sure people know that because when you listen to this on Friday, there'll probably be even more
updates on
Damar Hamlin. But for right now, things look good for him. He is trending upwards. He collapsed after a direct hit to his chest while tackling T. Higgins. T. Higgins can hear my voice. Brother, take a breath. Go out there. Keep competing. I'm sure that must be a tremendous amount of stress and strain on him, knowing that he was involved in that play. To the families of both of these guys and to both teams. Yeah. Man,
oh
how
my
crazy
gosh,
must
I'm
this
sorry.
Be? Emergency responders gave him CPR on the field before loading him on the ambulance. And really, the entire sports world began to hold its breath.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw this?
Sorry for that noise. The only reason I was looking up to see if T. Higgins had released a statement, which he has. I think this was just an hour ago. Forgive me if it wasn't an hour ago from right now, Thursday. But he says, obviously, it's been hard just because I had something to do with it. He said, everybody's been making me feel whole again. And I talked to his mom and everything's okay. He's doing good. So I'm in a good place right now.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully he is taking some time for himself. But, you know, with the news moving forward in a good, positive direction, I'm sure that that's making him feel much more at peace than he's probably felt over these last couple of days. What was your question?
My question was, what did you go through when you first heard about T. Tell me what your feelings
I didn't were. See it live because I was at an early dinner and I'm getting text messages that are like, whoa, that's crazy. Did you see that? People are assuming I'm watching the game mm-hmm. because I like to watch games.
Okay, relax.
And I'm like, no, what happened? Oh, was it a crazy outcome? Was it a crazy play? Like I'm, you know, assuming it's something like that. Like, oh, I should have been watching the game. And, you know, then I immediately get on Twitter and I see what happened. And then immediately, of course, people are like, don't share the video anymore. But I was confused. I didn't understand what was happening. And then, so I'm getting real live updates as it's happening about, you know, he's on the field. Now an ambulance is there. They took him away. But of course, we didn't have any details. So it was shocking. I was confused. I was sad. I just, my heart immediately went out to him, his family, people who had to watch that live. They had no answers as to what, we didn't even know if he was alive. Like, yeah. We just didn't know anything. I'd never seen anything like that in all the years that I've watched sports. And then just to hear, you know, former NFL athletes talking about it and their emotion and, you know, people looking for answers on where do we go from here? What do we do? People debating, should they continue the game? Because it was even in that point, it was so raw. What's going to happen? Seeing players crying on the field, covering their mouths. It was just, it was shocking. It was jarring. I mean, I had never seen anything like it. You know, so all I could do is say a personal prayer.
I wasn't watching when it happened.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching when it happened. I was doing something else. I looked on my ESPN app and it said that the game was delayed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, why would the game be delayed? And so I then turned on the television and I saw they had cut away from the game and there were three people sitting around. And I thought that there had been like a terrorist attack or something. Mm. I didn't know what event had happened.
Right.
I did, just saw it. I'm looking, and then I saw that like there had been an injury that had stopped the play. And obviously, I thought that this was a spinal cord injury of some sort. But normally, with those injuries, something will happen. A player will be carted off. You'll either get a thumbs up or you won't. And as the player is carted off, they'll take them to the hospital and they continue to play football.
Mm-hmm.
This one, when I was looking at it, it felt different.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I started to think when I was looking at everybody, when they talked about the fact that a player had collapsed and nobody knew what was going on, it's the first thing I'm thinking is this kid has passed away. Mm. Like this kid has died. He's passed away on the field. Then, you know, I start looking at what's going on and looking at what's happening. And I think like everyone else, I felt this sense of shock and fear. Like, just don't let this happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I always think in life about the turn. You know what I mean? Like, the turn. The intent is you watch a football game, you have fun. They're playing a football game. They're competing at the highest level to go out there and accomplish something for their teams, for themselves, and for their families. And then the turn is, you know, somebody is fighting for their life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just life is so unforgiving in that way. And it was interesting to see people united in positive feeling on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But that never happens. On Twitter, somebody's good is your terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's win is your loss.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's gain is your, I can't believe that happened for them. Always. But to see there be this sort of unifying, almost cynicism-defying sense of goodwill in this particular situation was deeply moving for me. And people think, or they say, that prayer and energy and vibes, that it doesn't matter. I think that it does. I think that you put things out into the universe, into the atmosphere, and you affect things.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping that there are enough prayers out there still for him as he continues to get better, because he's going to have another fight now. And that fight is to be the same Damar Hamlin.
Exactly.
That he was before. If you guys don't know him, he's been in the league a couple of years, played at Pitt, and got the opportunity to play this year because of an injury to Micah Hyde, who plays in the Bills' defensive backfield. But, you know, his life completely changed in one hit on that night.
And I hope, and as we're talking about it and talking about what happened on the field and potentially what could be done to prevent, once we know more, that type of injury happening again, we also have to talk about the future of DeMar and if he returns or if he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And other athletes that might not have that type of injury, but other injuries that completely take away their ability to do a career that they've pretty much invested their entire life into.
Yeah.
That's a conversation that needs to be talked about more. I cannot name the show. I think it was a Cleveland show. Shout out to them. There was a brother on there who had a really great...
Absolutely.
List.
Broke it down in terms of...
of disability. And mm-hmm. I've seen it in real life. Like, I dated a guy who was no longer an athlete, a professional athlete. His career got cut short, shorter than he did. Just made it over that 3 years.
Yeah.
Because you have to at least have 3 years. I think it's 3 years and a day is what it used to be. Just made it over the 3 years, but still was in a fight to get 4 years, seeing multiple team doctors that were deemed the doctor to see by the NFL. You couldn't see your own doctor. Had to go multiple times, would fail, didn't have the certain number of checkpoints, had to go to another doctor, get a positive, got the go, go to a third doctor. That doctor told him it was a no, no disability. Just looking for a couple $1,000s a month to be able to survive the pain, the lifelong pain that they've suffered on the field. They're injured. It's insane like what they have to go through just to get disability, for sacrificing their bodies for our entertainment. You know what I mean? For in like, it can be detrimental to them for a lifetime. So I hope this brings up more issues about disability, and sets these NFL players up in the future.
We're gonna bring on Dr. Cooper in a second to talk about DeMar Hamlin's injury and perhaps what DeMar Hamlin's injury and perhaps what the road that he has to sort of make it back and what he thinks happened. Dr. Joshua Cooper, who is the head of cardiac electrophysiology at Temple University. But I think something interesting happened that night too. And it was also moving and eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about this a little bit after we talk about, after we talk to Dr. Cooper, because there was fallout from what happened on Monday night. I think for a second, we did something that we rarely do.
Okay.
Which is look at athletes as human beings. I get all the reasons why it's difficult to look at an athlete as a human being.
Sure.
Because human beings can't dunk on 12-foot rims. Mm-hmm. We don't think that they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings can't run the 40 in 4.3 seconds. Mm-hmm. There's something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at a guy, we always say it, that's not human.
Yeah.
Oh, he's squatting 600 pounds. That's not human.
Right.
Look how he contorted his body in the air. Look how far he threw the football. That's not human. And another thing about them is they make unbelievable sums of money to do this. So what we see sometimes when we see athletes is we see people who don't seem like they're the same species as us physically, because
mm-hmm.
they're doing things that we could never imagine doing.
Sure.
And then they don't seem like they're the same as us socially, because they're living lifestyles that we can't identify with, or lifestyles that we don't understand. I think it was important that people understood in that moment that that's just flesh encasing a soul. That's just like a person, with a family, with dreams, with goals, with aspirations, who's probably sacrificed a tremendous amount to be in the situation that he's in right now. And that, like anybody else that gets sick or has a medical emergency anywhere else, that there are a lot of people whose lives are going to be forever shattered if the outcome that we seem like we're going to get wouldn't have happened. That these are just people. And I hope that we'll continue to remember that. That these are just people, not just when they're in a medical emergency. These are just people when they make a mistake. These are just people when they're negotiating contracts. These are just people when they're trying to get their disability payments. Mm-hmm. These are just people when they have political things to say. These are just people. They might feel and seem different than you, but they're human beings. Mm-hmm. And I was, to be honest with you, I was really, really inspired by the fact that so many people like cared about Damar Hamlin.
Oh my gosh. Praying in the stands.
Yeah.
Members of the other team, Cincinnati Bengals, were going to the hospital, bringing stuff. And then also the donations that were made.
Yeah.
To Damar Hamlin's GoFundMe, which was, he was just seeking
$2,500. $2,500. His Chasing M's organization has a GoFundMe. The goal was $2,500. It now has $7 million. We're going to talk about some of the reporting on this and some of the other stories that circle the NFL on this. After we hear from Dr. Cooper right now, we're going to go a little bit deeper into what may have happened and what his road back might look like. Guys, we have another friend of Van on the podcast right now.
Donnie, hit the noise.
Hit the noise. Dr. Joshua Cooper. I'm gonna tell you guys about what an awesome guy this is. I'm gonna tell you guys about what an awesome guy.
Is this your personal cardiologist?
Kind of.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry, doctor. I can only imagine how annoying Van must be.
Hey, but look, but this guy's he's the director of electrophysiology at Temple University, a professor of medicine. Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University. Top doctors, cardiac electrophysiology, Philadelphia Magazine, 2011 through 2022. Best doctors in America, cardiovascular disease, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019 to 2020. Dr. Cooper, thank you for joining us on Higher Learning today. I'll ask you my first question. Obviously, we saw an incredibly dramatic and scary cardiac event happened on the field in a game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills. We sort of know a little bit more now about what happened. When you first saw it, what went through your mind?
Having me, because I think it's important to educate people on events like this, because this is potentially an inspirational story. Hopefully that turns out what it is. When someone collapses as he did suddenly on the field, the first thing you think about, given how sudden it was, is that the brain suddenly didn't have enough oxygen and you lose consciousness all of a sudden. That can come from a few reasons and a few reasons only. Usually it's either the heartbeat completely stops or the heartbeat goes extraordinarily fast. In both of those scenarios, the heart's not able to pump blood to the brain. Or there's some reason that there's a massive sudden drop in blood pressure, for example, rupture of a major artery internally or something of that sort. And so when you see him collapse suddenly, again, thinking about the electrical system being my specialty, my first thought is, wow, was this a sudden cardiac arrest, which is a extreme fast heart rate that can cause somebody to immediately lose consciousness. And they did exactly what they were supposed to do in resuscitating him. They substituted for the heart's physical pumping by pushing on the chest and forcing blood forward, getting the electrical defibrillator there and giving a shock to get him out of that life-threatening fast rhythm and restore his own heartbeat.
I just want to highlight, I want to piggyback on what you were saying and highlight the work that was done on the field by those first responders. How important was what they did? And maybe if you could speak to that in saving his life and in the quickness that they did that.
When somebody has a cardiac arrest of this type, and there's lots of reasons why somebody's heart might go into a cardiac arrest, a fast arrhythmia, seconds matter. Because the moment that happens, the brain is not getting enough blood supply and oxygen, and the clock starts ticking at that moment. And so literally every second that you delay in restoring blood flow to the brain temporarily with CPR, with chest compressions, and then longer term by actually getting the heart to do it on its own by kicking it electrically back into normal rhythm, every second that you speed up and get that done saves the chance of having brain injury and surviving altogether. So the fact that they acted quickly is very encouraging. And in fact, we heard some good news today that he's in fact waking up and indicating and responding to questions, which is an amazing accomplishment for the team on the field and an amazing thing in general, hearing it, what hopefully will end up being a success story in saving him from a cardiac arrest.
There's going to be talk about, now that we see things are trending in a positive direction for Damar Hamlin, there's going to be talk about how he's going to be able to recover from this. What factors play into how much of a recovery you'll be able to see from Damar Hamlin?
Yeah, again, I don't know all of the details, and presumably they'll be forthcoming. But when somebody has a cardiac arrest, the two factors to consider in terms of recovery are, number one, how quickly was he shocked back to normal? Meaning, what was the length of time that the brain and the other organs were deprived of blood and oxygen? And then what is the, if any, underlying condition that may speak to the risk in the future of having other events of this type or other potential problems? Many people who suffer cardiac arrest end up having either an inherited heart condition or some other condition that may have implications in the future in terms of risk. And we can talk about that. Those people end up getting implanted with an internal implantable defibrillator to treat them if this ever were to happen again. But other people, we feel that it may be an absolute fluke, as may end up being the case with him. And if they do testing and find that his heart does not show any signs of a permanent condition, his doctors will have to decide with him whether that would be necessary. But in terms of his physical recovery, given the early time that it looks like he's already starting to show improvement in neurologic recovery, that's a really good sign in terms of hoping that he comes back to the way he was before. And I would hope for a very quick recovery in terms of his physical and neurological status.
Mm. When you see something like this happen, and I've never seen anything like this before, and it seems like most people who were analyzing it, sports commentators, had not either. You start to say, you know, people start to blame certain things. And of course, people are, you know, starting to speak on the dangers of football and the game and reevaluating certain things. Is there anything that could be done as in equipment? I don't want to get into the specifics of football, of like banning a certain type of hit, but is there equipment, padding? I don't know. Is there something that could be done to prevent this type of injury from happening again to a player?
Yeah, it depends on what turns out to be the cause of his particular cardiac arrest. There have been a number of people, including myself, who wonder about the possibility that this was the physical blow to the chest, a hard helmet striking the chest, that can and has been described mostly in younger athletes, can provoke a cardiac arrest even in somebody with a normal heart. And so the studies that have been done, including by some amazing doctors who came up with a model to investigate this, doctors Mark Link, Barry Marin, Mark Estes, have demonstrated that there is an interaction between whatever hits the chest and the heart that can determine whether this can result in an arrhythmia of this type. And so they looked at such things as the speed of the projectile, the size of the projectile, the padding of the chest, wear on the chest, the timing of the chest. And basically what they concluded is that it is almost a lightning strike event. The collision has to happen at a millisecond moment of vulnerability of the heart while the heart's in its electrical recovery after a heartbeat. It has to be an exact place in the chest at an exact speed. For example, when they did studies with a wooden ball in a particular model that they created, they showed that, you know, 20 miles per hour was too slow and 50 to 70 miles per hour was too fast, and about a 40 mile per hour hit to the chest was just right. So there has to be an exact combination of circumstances. They did experiments with different types of balls that were softer, and they did show that that can impact the likelihood of this event happening. The bottom line is it's an extremely rare type of event, assuming, again, that the blow is the cause of it. Protective padding can help. One of the questions is, are the type of helmets that are used too hard? Should there be a layer of soft covering on the surface that could change the way a helmet interacts with the chest? Those are the types of things that I would think about.
So I want you to name the specific phenomenon that you're talking about. What is it called again?
Yeah, I didn't mention it. It's called commotio cordis, which is basically a term that means a blow to the chest. And it's been described for a very long time. It's not new, and thankfully it's very rare, but it's always tragic because it usually happens in the context of a young, healthy person. Most of the people who've been reported are children, you know, under the age of 20 or so. Their chest walls are thinner. They're more susceptible to this. As we get older, the chest is stiffer and there's more padding naturally. And with muscle, et cetera. This is a very unusual event. If in fact that's what occurred, it's a very unusual event in an adult.
What are the chances, and this is the last question for me, Doc, what are the chances that an athlete of his caliber, Damar Hamlin, who had played football his entire life, was a standout at at Pitt, what are the chances that he would have something congenital and they would have missed it with the various tests that he would have had to gone through, or have gone through, should I say, for his entire life to make it to the NFL? Is that something that happens?
Yeah, I'm not intimately familiar with the screening that goes on, but obviously for elite athletes in the NFL, there are obviously physicals and other testing that are done. There are some conditions that are easily picked up on an EKG or an ultrasound, an echocardiogram of the heart. But there are other conditions that can be invisible to the standard testing that's done, including a lot of genetic conditions that may not show up until an event like this occurs. So at this point, obviously, they're going to do more extensive testing, including genetic testing and other testing, to see if they can find some susceptibility that he may have had to have this occur. And if they end up coming up empty, everything is negative, they don't find anything, then this may have been a chance phenomenon that may never occur again in the same person. It's not uncommon for this type of event to occur in somebody who's healthy, who passed all the screening tests. And I think the biggest message here isn't so much that we need to do wider screening, but we need to be prepared for when this happens. The big message here is automatic defibrillators need to be in places where people congregate, including athletic stadiums. Everyone needs to know how to use them. It is bystanders who save people's lives. Literally 5 minutes is almost too long a time to wait for EMS, and they usually don't get there in 5 minutes. And so whoever witnesses somebody who collapses needs to immediately start chest compressions, designate somebody to go get the defibrillator, get it on that person right away and give them a shock. And that's going to be save much more lives, I think, than the screening.
You kind of touched on this, but I just can't stop thinking about it. Because this already happened to Damar, how likely is it, if it's this rare, I can't remember the name. What is it that we think he might have?
Commotio cordis.
Commotio cordis.
Yeah.
If that's what it is, because it's happened once, how likely is it that it could happen again? And if it does make him more likely to be prone to this happening again, should he play again?
That's a great question. And it's hard for me to speculate because obviously he's a celebrity. We all care about him. And the most important thing is his recovery from this event. And it's going to be his doctors that are going to use a lot of information that I certainly, and we don't have, to decide on his future risk. But if they find that he has a condition that may make him more susceptible to this type of arrhythmia in the future, then the first question that they're going to have to address is, should he be implanted with a defibrillator? The answer probably would be yes. And then the question is, would he be able to return to competitive athletics? There is a precedent for people who have had a defibrillator implanted for a cardiac arrest where they were saved, returning to athletics. For example, Christian Eriksen, the Danish soccer player who had a cardiac arrest on the field in 2021, was resuscitated and within 4 minutes got a life-saving shock, and in fact was awake as they were carting him off the field, waving to fans. That's how quickly they responded. and he recovered immediately in that regard. He ended up having a defibrillator implanted, and my understanding is he's now returning to professional soccer. But that's a very personal decision to be made by the player, by their doctors, and there's a lot of factors that would play into that decision.
Okay, Dr. Cooper, we're going to let you go, but before we do, I want to say something real quick.
Okay.
All right. It might have been around 2021 that I think I talked about it on the podcast, that I still have them from time to time. I was having what's called PVCs, right. Preventricular mm-hmm. contractions, and they were running me crazy. They were, I was so afraid. My stress was so high. It's not something I hadn't had before. It comes back whenever I really get really stressed out. My stress was so high. My sleep was terrible. And I was really going through it. I reached out to Dr. Cooper, who is the director of electrophysiology at Temple University, on Twitter. It almost makes me emotional. And this man has been a phenomenal friend to me, a therapist to me, an advocate, someone who's helped me understand my body, my mind-body connection, someone who is like whatever I have needed from him in terms of just information, comfort, a remarkable human being, a remarkable family man, a fantastic doctor, just a remarkable person. And I really don't even have the words to thank you. You have no idea what your knowledge and friendship and connection has meant to me over the last couple of years. Seriously.
Well, we're back at you. It's been a pleasure. I think when we're dealing with any medical condition from benign to life-threatening, it's very difficult and frightening, and you feel very alone. And I think the most important part initially and throughout is to have good communication, find a healthcare provider who you trust, who spends time, who explains what's going on, and knowledge is power. The more you understand about what's going on, the less frightening it is, the more in control you feel. And it all goes from there. And that's true for cardiac arrest. It's true for PVCs. And, you know, we get through it together. It's a partnership.
Thank you so much. Love Aww, you, man.
That's so sweet.
That's Dr. Joshua Cooper. Give him your Twitter so they can, like, get all some of the best information. Like, I love, like, it's funny. Something else is funny real quick. Like, they're heart nerds on Twitter. They're like doctors. They're like heart nerds. They're doctors who put up, like, EKGs. And they go, hey, man, what's going on here? And then when you look under the thread, there are different doctors that are going back and forth. I love watching it. They're so passionate about what it is that they do. That's how I found them. I was put PVC on Twitter. And he was talking about it. I wouldn't watch his YouTube videos. But if you really want to learn more about your body, you can from his Twitter. Like, why don't you tell people where they can find you, Doc?
Yeah, well, my Twitter handle is @ NarrowQRS. You're right. It's a nerdy thing. There are a lot of Twitter nerds. I don't know what to tell you. I'll tell you though, nowadays the Twitter experience has been remarkable for a lot of people. And I've learned so much. I've been able to teach so much through social media. Nowadays, things are a little bit different. Twitter's operating differently. So I can't say that my Twitter feed is the same as it used to be, or that my tweets have the same impact that they used to. I'll try to keep using it, but it's been a little frustrating. But nonetheless, any method that people have, whether it's YouTube, I have a YouTube channel with educational videos, whether it's Twitter, reach out in whatever means you can to self-educate, find a partner, and go from there. And I'm so glad you reached out. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Your friendship has been very special. And I wish you the best, man, and more to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's Joshua Cooper, everybody.
Dr. Cooper.
Cooper. Thank you, Doc. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank
on
you
Higher
so
Learning.
Much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for reaching out.
You like the Doc, don't you? He's nice.
I like y'all's friendship. It's great. It's really cute.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something real quick. He is of a uncommon patience. I'd be hitting him up all the time. I'm going to be okay.
I know you do. That's why I said at the top of the interview, I was like, oh my gosh, I know he annoys you. But that's what you would want from a doctor, right? You know, right. The doctor, they always talk about bedside manner. Just the mm-hmm. fact that he is that way with you and he cares and he's passionate. That's what you could only hope that all your doctors would be that way.
As we speak right now, he's sending me more information on resuscitation. And he's just, he loves his job. He loves people. He's an amazing guy. I'm telling you. He's like he's an amazing man. Okay. There was a holding hands and a joining of hands around Damar Hamlin's situation.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also some bullshit.
Hmm.
As there always is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to think that human beings are constituted of bullshit. Let's start with the first thing.
Okay.
ESPN reported that the NFL wanted to restart the game after Hamlin collapsed and that the teams refused. And that they were given a 5-minute warm-up notice, and they said, screw it. The league said it never considered restarting the game. Who do you believe?
I believe ESPN. Because ESPN has come back out and said, we're telling you what we were told. Mind you, this was on ESPN. So I would think that they would be notified that, hey, like, we got a 5-minute warm-up. We're about to get things going again.
Mm-hmm.
I believe ESPN, knowing what we know so far about the NFL, and they're a league that is motivated by money and business over everything,
mm-hmm.
and not the athlete.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to move him off the field. He was still, this is probably the other thing, move him off the field. He's still alive. He's at the hospital. We'll keep everybody updated. Let's get on with the game. You know, this is a game. Big time in the season. This game means something. And it was all business to them. I absolutely believe, because this has never been done before in this way. So for them, it's business as usual.
Hmm. You know what I think is funny about the NFL? I think we actually hold the NFL to too high a standard.
Who does?
People. I think expecting the NFL to care in this situation, the NFL, I need people to get real about what corporations are. But the NFL is an entertainment corporation whose workforce is primarily young Black athletes, right? I'm not saying that the NFL shouldn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, they should care.
Of course.
But they shouldn't care any more than Walmart cares about the checkers at Walmart or the people in the warehouse. Shouldn't care any more than people care about factory workers or people driving trains, because in all of these industries, it is people that make these industries go. In any industry that I can think of, it is people,
of course,
that make these industries go.
Mm-hmm.
When you are dealing with a corporation, and I am not here to bash corporations, I'm here to tell the truth. I'm sitting in an office on a set right now talking to someone, and all around me there is corporate shit.
Yes, there is.
All right, we are, this is what I'm telling you. Corporations exist to make money and further themselves. And they will make decisions based around that.
Mm-hmm.
People need to leverage the power that they have against corporations by hurting them financially, because it's the only thing that they care about. That's why what happened on the field was so profound. What happened on the field, in my opinion, was people saying no, which is the way you should deal with corporations. The NFL, I said before, that this has happened before with other types of injuries and the game has resumed.
Mm-hmm.
Seen it happen before.
Of course.
Game is resumed. A player was carted off in the bowl game LSU just played at Purdue. I hope that gentleman is okay. But the game went on,
mm-hmm.
after he was carted off.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like he was moving and everything. He gave a thumbs up, the game went on. For it to feel different and be different, for you to want a money-making entity to listen to you, you have to put something on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the players did. The players in this position, in this situation, said, hey, this is different. This is not business as usual. We're not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
According to reports, we're not going to do it. And in that situation, it wasn't the NFL that put people over product. It was the players.
And coaches.
And coaches that put themselves over the shield.
Absolutely.
And That should be a lesson to the players. That should be a lesson to them that they are so consequential that they have the power to do that when it is appropriate for them to try, when it is appropriate for them to do it. They drew a line in the sand and said, no, not going to do it. And to me, that's very powerful. And it's very powerful and very consequential that people understand that sometimes in order to get what you want from an entity that is essentially soulless, like corporations don't have souls. Like none of them do, right? They exist to raise the share price for stockholders so everybody can go have fun on Epstein Island. All right. So in order for you to make them listen to you, you have to have solidarity. You must have solidarity. You need to have solidarity in order to make that happen. And so I am proud of the Tennessee Titans, of the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals, that they showed the humanity and solidarity to stand right there and say, yo, we can't do it.
Yeah.
We can't do it. Don't care what it does to your playoff seeding. Don't care what it does to the out. We can't do it.
Yeah.
We're more concerned about the person than the shield. Very powerful to me.
I think it's a lesson that can be applied outside, off the field, and just in general, when you put it like that. How much power people have when they come together and what they can overcome.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, got to talk about Skip Bayless.
Yeah. Put your hands down. Put your hands down.
I'm going to do Skip the solid of reading all of his tweets.
I think you have to.
I'm going to read all of Skip's tweets.
Okay.
This is during the incident. Now, I did not see all of these tweets in the order that they were tweeted.
Oh, okay.
I did not. Okay. When I checked Twitter, and I had a very, very fiery tweet called Skip a bone bag. And I said that how much I hated him because I was full of emotion. I'm an emotional guy. I make no apology for what I said.
Okay.
But there was context.
Yes.
That was missed.
And I'm curious, after you read these tweets, did the context change your initial thoughts? But please read the tweets.
On this, yes. Okay. On Skip, no.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay. Okay.
So this is the first tweet. Not exactly sure what happened to DeMar Hamlin. Players on both teams are shaking. Ambulance out on the field. CPR administered. Can't remember play being stopped for this length of time. Just said a prayer for him and his family. Second tweet. I've seen so many horrific injuries suffered on football fields, yet I've never seen a reaction like this. In every other situation I witnessed or covered, the game always went on fairly quickly. We just said that. The attitude was, hey, it's football. For these players, it was different. Okay.
Different in all caps.
Okay. Last one. No doubt the NFL is considering postponing the rest of this game, but how? This late in the season, a game of this magnitude is crucial to the regular season outcome, which subtly seems so irrelevant. Okay. Now, the third tweet is the big tweet. And when I looked at that tweet, I said, in the tweet, Skip put the game first, and then ellipses or whatever you call those. What do you call them? Those two little dots are there.
That's right.
Ellipses. And then he put the man second. And I was pissed off because that's on brand for Skip Bayless.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said, hey, Van, you're wrong about that. And I will admit something. That in the flow of these tweets, the first thing that Skip does is not exactly thoughts and prayers, but he did say, actually, he is thoughts and prayers.
Yes,
he just said a prayer for him and his family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. The next day, Skip Bayless was on Undisputed with Shannon Sharpe. By himself. Shannon Sharpe came after that. So this is a full day after what we saw on Monday. This was Wednesday. Shannon Sharpe came back. This is what happened. When Shannon Sharpe came back to Undisputed, I think you guys have probably heard this, but I want to make sure that we have it right now and they're able to let you listen to it.
It's good to see you, Shannon. I understand there's something you want to share this morning.
Good morning, yes.
Good morning.
There's been a lot of speculation of why I wasn't on air yesterday, and I won't get into speculation or conjecture or innuendo, but I will say this. In watching that game on Monday night, what happened to DeMar Hamlin struck me a little different. As a brotherhood in the NFL, when injuries happen, when we know injuries are a part of the game, I've seen guys suffer ACLs and Achilles tear, but I've never seen anybody have to be revived and fight for their life on the field. So it struck me a little differently because I remember seeing my brother paralyzed on the field temporarily, and he was able to regain focus. Skip tweeted something, and although I disagree with the tweet, hopefully Skip would take it down, but I didn't want it.
Well, time out. I'm not going to take it down because okay, I stand by what I tweeted.
Skip, let me
okay.
finish. Let me,
all right, okay.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Go ahead, let's go, Jen.
Okay.
I mean, I cannot even get through a monologue without you interrupting me.
Well,
you could have came back. Skip,
well, I thought,
Skip, just let
me. I was going
to
bring
no,
up.
No,
this.
I was just going to say, Skip, I didn't want to yesterday to get into a situation where DeMar Hamlin was the issue. We should have been talking about him and not get into okay. your tweet. That's what I was going to do. But you can't even let me finish my opening monologue without you interrupting.
Okay. I was under the impression you weren't going to bring this up because nobody here had a problem with that tweet.
No. Clearly, the bosses wanted you to offer explanation, so clearly somebody
No, they
had a
did
problem.
Not have... Nobody...
Let's go, Jen.
Okay.
Thoughts and prayers.
So, by the way, Jen, shout out to those thoughts and prayers. Jen, great save. So, Skip Bayless. What did Indiana Jones do?
I've never seen an Indiana Jones anything.
This is remarkable.
This is not the point.
This is remarkable. Johnny, Donnie, what did Indiana Jones
do? It's remarkable, but not surprising. Right. What was your question?
What did Indiana Jones do?
Wow, Donnie.
I don't know. He whipped.
Oh, pot kettle.
Ashley, what did Indiana Jones do? What's Indiana Jones's occupation?
He's like an explorer or an archaeologist or something.
Thank you, Ashley.
Oh, I would
Indiana
have never
Jones
guessed that.
Is an archaeologist.
I thought dinosaurs were involved for some reason.
Are you fucking kidding me? Indiana
Jones. Well, I feel like the clip I always see is him running away from a rock or something.
What the fuck does that have to do with dinosaurs?
I don't know. I just thought Stone Age.
Okay. I can see it.
Thank you.
But the dinosaurs weren't in the Stone Age. Whatever, man. looks like, okay. Indiana Jones is an archaeologist. He hunts relics. A relic, as we know, okay. is something from a time past.
Yes, yes, that I know.
Something that gives you a marker. From a different civilization, tells you about a moment in time, an era that existed some time ago. Normally some far place away. You learn about how somebody ate. You might get a spoon. You might see, this is the way a toilet, this is the way how people, the type of technology that they mm-hmm. had. But a relic is something old, and it's something that's past its time.
Okay.
Skip Bayless is a relic. He is a relic of a very specific time in American sports and athletic discourse. He's a relic of a time when what we talked about earlier was certainly not the case, when athletes weren't human.
Right, right, right.
When what they were basically high-paid, high-performance cattle that were out to do a job. So whatever you wrote about them, whatever you said about them, whatever you put out in the world about them didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly didn't matter what they had to say back to you. Because if they had anything to say back to you, then they were overly sensitive, they were spoiled, or they were crybabies. Skip Bayless, in my opinion, despite the context that we saw on Monday, doesn't have any respect for athletes, and I think particularly the black athlete.
Yeah.
Comes from a time where your life cycle as an athlete were cheers, boos, death. Cheer you, boo you, you die. And a little scandal in between. We weren't having conversations about mental health. We weren't having conversations about the quality of somebody's life off the field. We weren't having conversations about how people lived their life when there were no whistles, when there were no refs, when there were no cameras. I don't think he respects the mind or the psyche of the athlete. Let me tell you why that's evident in the clip we just played. You guys know Shannon Sharpe. A lot of you might not know Sterling Sharpe. Sterling Sharpe was on pace to be one of the top five greatest NFL wide receivers of all time. If you go back and look at Sterling Sharpe's numbers, he played with the Green Bay Packers. He was the guy that I knew about. He was the Sharpe that, to me, was the biggest legend of the... He was the guy who was running the league. He was one of the best players in the league. His career was cut short because of a neck injury, because of a spinal injury.
Mm-hmm.
And Shannon Sharpe, his brother, went on to have the Hall of Fame career, right, the three Super Bowls, and all of that. Sterling Sharpe, fantastic player, right? Skip cut him off right after he was talking about the fact that his brother had suffered the same type of injury. His brother suffered the same type of injury. And because his brother suffered that injury, it took him an entire extra day to process and focus what he was watching.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, Shannon Sharpe was talking about his trauma. He was talking about his process.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about the way he was trying to gather himself and not come on to Undisputed and make everything about him. He wanted to make sure that when he talked about the situation with Damar Hamlin, that he could do it in a holistic way. Skip, in some way, heard a challenge. And Shannon Sharpe didn't like that tweet. Scores of other people didn't like that tweet. I still don't like the tweet. In context, I understand the tweet. And what did Skip do? He stepped on him. He stepped on him to interject what he feels like the truth of that situation is. If this had happened one time with him, I would understand it. It's not. It's mm-hmm. who Skip Bayless is.
Right.
Skip Bayless is somebody that we should turn the page on.
Mm-hmm.
Skip Bayless is somebody that represents a different, much more pernicious part of sports media. Nobody has to tell me about how dangerous the media can be. No one. I have a master's degree in how dangerous the media can be and how much it can affect somebody's life. What I'm trying to tell you is, going forward in my future and going forward in the future of covering people, what we're asking for is an extra layer of responsibility. And he's incapable of that.
Right.
An extra layer of sensitivity. And he's incapable of that. And he continues to show that he is incapable of that. And he also continues to show bias. Because whereas Skip Bayless won't get off LeBron James' dick, won't get off Bronny James' dick, who's LeBron James's teenage son,
mm-hmm.
endlessly just deriding Russell Westbrook. And it's okay not to like those guys' game or what they do on the court. But I've seen him cape for people like Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield, all with all respect to these guys, classic NFL flameouts. I'm just talking about what they did on the field. I'm talking about the fact that Baker's fighting for his career right now. I'm talking about the fact that Tim Tebow couldn't stay in the league. And I'm talking about the fact that Johnny Manziel couldn't conquer his personal demons to even give himself a shot.
Yeah.
But what I've seen from Skip Bayless is endless cock gobbling about all of those guys until the hammer had to come down, that it was over, until they played themselves out of it. I would hear about how amazing they are. But even more so, we talked about it here on this very podcast. We talked about Dak Prescott a couple of years ago. Donnie, I want you to run a little piece of Dak Prescott's interview when he was talking to Graham Benzinger about the depression that he was going through following the suicide of his brother.
This quarantine and this offseason, I started experiencing emotions I've never felt before. Anxiety for the main one. And then, honestly, a couple of days before my brother passed, I would say I started experiencing depression. Didn't know necessarily what I was going through, to say the least.
Okay. Rachel, what do you think when you hear that?
What Dak said?
Yeah.
I think this is a man who is being extremely vulnerable, who is opening up and talking about something that we rarely see athletes talk about, for fear of, you know, persecution, for being, you know, told that, you know, I don't know, you need to be harder than you normally are for not fitting a certain stereotype that an NFL player or an athlete is supposed to fit. This was Dak Prescott being himself. And yeah, so just to answer your question, that.
Dak Prescott being himself.
Yes.
And you would think that anyone who, I'm not, you know what? No, I'm not even going to say what you would think. Donnie, play Skip's reaction to this just to refresh people's memory.
Because of all that, I don't have sympathy for him going public with, I got depressed. I suffered depression early in COVID to the point that I couldn't even go work out. Look, he's the quarterback of America's team.
Okay. Skip goes on to say he's the quarterback of America's team. People look to him for inspiration. The other guys that line up with him and play with him, they look for him. They look at him for leadership. And of course, they couldn't possibly be led by somebody who has issues with depression or has gone through a time in his life where a while before then he lost his mother and then he lost his brother.
Yeah.
And we were all in a pandemic going through things. The fact that somebody, honestly, would fix their mouth to say that in the day and age that we live in, after the 2 years that we've all had, mm-hmm. it's astonishing. You guys know that I'm emotional, right? I know that I'm emotional, guys. I know that I can be irrationally emotional. But I promise you right now, I'm just talking about the fact that we can't continue to have people in the space like that with this much power and not discuss how they affect things. Like Undisputed is a grand show. Now people want Shannon to, it's a huge show. Now people want Shannon to quit his job. Why should Shannon have to quit his job? Because the guy sitting across from him is a disrespectful malcontent. Like, I'm looking at that. Dak Prescott is talking not as the captain of the Dallas Cowboys, not as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. That's what Skip views him as. Skip views Dak Prescott as the quarterback of America's team and nothing else. Dak Prescott is right there talking as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
We can't give this motherfucker a little time to be scared from the pandemic, to be anxious from the pandemic, to be sad about his brother's death. Like, what are we talking about? Like, we remember when we talked about that on the pod?
Absolutely. And the only way that you can have a response where your very first sentence is, I have no sympathy, is you don't look at him as a human being.
As a person.
As a person at all. And that's the thing with Skip Bayless. He doesn't look at, and we literally just talked about this, he doesn't look at particularly Black athletes, not even just on his level, but as human beings. And he sees them as they are supposed to do a particular job. And for Dak Prescott, that is to play football. I don't want to hear you talk. I don't want to hear your opinion. I don't want to hear you feel. I just want you to do what you're supposed to do and nothing else. He is so detached from that experience, from you could say Black people, you could say Black athletes. He's so detached, he doesn't care, and he doesn't have to care. When you go down all the things that Skip Bayless has done, he's never been reprimanded in a serious way. So it continues to feed the beast. If you do something over and over again, and nobody tells you that it's wrong, or you're not punished for it, wouldn't you feel empowered, like I can do anything? Maybe you would, because you have a conscience and a soul. But for Skip Bayless, he probably feels he can do and say whatever, and all it's going to do is get a slap on the wrist because he's creating controversy, and he's getting ratings for this network. He's never in trouble for what he does. So for him, why would he ever stop? He thinks he's right. What did he say in that clip with Shannon? The executives didn't have a problem with it.
Which is not true, because after he tweeted that, he came back and he clarified what he meant.
But did he miss the show that day?
No, he didn't.
So if the executives don't have a problem with it, he isn't fined, he isn't suspended, he isn't told what he can't do. So for Skip, I can say whatever the fuck I want to say. I've been doing it since the 70s. I've been writing it. Now I'm saying it on TV. And I've said it up against some of the biggest athletes and most powerful people in sports. And nobody's done anything to me. Why would he ever be any different?
Well said.
Not that I think he shouldn't be, but I'm just saying there's nowhere to go from here but to your point, to let him go.
Donnie, let's play the dust up between Skip and Shannon. It's getting increasingly tense over at Undisputed. Let's play the dust up between Skip and Shannon from a couple of weeks back. We've been through this, but I want people to hear it again because this once again speaks to what I'm talking about. You have Skip Bayless talking to Shannon Sharpe, a guy who accomplished everything that you can accomplish at his position in the NFL. Super Bowl, Pro Bowler, All Pro, Hall of Fame. There are no more accomplishments. Okay. They're in an argument about Tom Brady. Watch what happens.
Still playing at a high level at 45 when you had to stop at 35. Yeah,
that's what you
that's
do.
That's the point.
That's what you do. Every time I call something into question, I'm jealous.
No.
I never
said you were jealous of Baker Mayfield.
Skip, I did what I did. You make it seem like I was a bum. I'm in the effing Hall of Fame.
Okay,
I got
so
three
what?
Super Bowls.
So what?
So what?
He's way better than you were.
I'm better than
way
you.
Better.
Skip, what I got to see what you do. You take personal shots.
No, when, for I don't, defense, I don't take personal shots.
Time
you
time
started
time
it.
Time out. You would take a personal shot at me.
I didn't take a personal shot at you.
Wait a minute.
What are you talking about?
You would take a personal
shot. Put your glasses back on.
Okay. So in that situation, you're talking to somebody. You're talking to somebody with the stature of Shannon Sharpe. And Shannon Sharpe talks about the fact that Tom Brady, who's 1,000 years old, is having a season not comparable to some of the seasons he's had in the past. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback in NFL history, period. The greatest player in NFL history, period. 7 Super Bowls is so OD. 7 Super Bowls at quarterback is so crazy. Like one with a different organization. Mm-hmm. There is no way you can besmirch or impugn anything that Tom Brady has done.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. You can't. Tom Brady is the fucking GOAT.
Right.
Done. Why does Shannon Sharpe have to be jealous of Tom Brady if he's criticizing Tom Brady about what Tom Brady is not getting done this year?
Right now.
Why would Skip Bayless make it seem like Shannon Sharpe isn't qualified or good enough to have something negative to say about Tom Brady? Like, what is it about those two men, one of them who is insanely accomplished in this same sport? Like, what's Skip's problem? What's the issue? Why is Skip Bayless so quick to defend Tom Brady's legacy against the man who we assumed before this, he was pretty friendly with and that he works with every day?
Sure.
The question that Shannon Sharpe is asking, yo, why are you insulting me for Tom Brady?
Because how dare Shannon Sharpe? That's basically what Skip was saying.
You guys, I could go on. Skip Bayless, after Skip Bayless wrote a column about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's book back in the day. And in the column, he ripped Kareem to shreds for making valid observations about living as a black man in America. There's something going on there. And it didn't just start now. We were in a different place. It's not Skip that was different. Mm-hmm. Skip hasn't gotten any better or any worse.
Mm-mm.
We've changed. We're different.
Mm-hmm.
We want better.
Mm-hmm.
We want different. We want more for the people who we share our communities with and happen to be athletes or singers or the people who work at hospitals or first responders. We want to be more respectful of people's space, their mental health, what they're going through, and what's happening. We want, look, sports is sports, sports talk media. You criticize people's job. You can. You criticize people's job if you go to a restaurant.
Sure.
Go to a restaurant, you criticize people's job. How about this? The question is this. Let's say you go to a restaurant, you don't like the service. You don't like it.
Okay.
Don't like the service. Give this restaurant fucking 1 star. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Within your right to do that. You don't like the service.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's say a week later, you run into the waiter at the gym, or maybe courtside at the Lakers game or something like that, depending on where you are. And a person says to you, they say, hey, you came over to fucking Toca Madera, Delilah, wherever it was, and I wasn't at my best that night. Like, I was slow, I was snappy, but I just want to tell you right now, you know, my mom committed suicide.
Mm.
My mom died. My friend died. I had a personal tragedy in my life, and I wasn't at my best during that time. I'm just letting you know that that's kind of what it was. It's my bad, right? There are two types of people. One type of person goes, oh, man, I'm sorry about that. Are you okay? You're doing all right, man? Just forget about the meal. It's like, whatever. You know what I mean? It was what it was. But, you know, one type of person puts their personality and the way that they look at things on the back burner to be able to connect with the person right there that's been through something. The second person goes, well, the next time you go through something, don't come into work because you ruined my night.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you guys, that's a very basic analogy. But we're trying in society, or at least the people that I know, to be one person. And I'm telling you right now, Skip Bayless is the other.
Correct. And if you question that at all, go read what he wrote 45 years ago about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it shows the lack of regard, empathy that he has for him as a Black man, for him as a Black athlete, for him even trying to understand the Black experience. That is the foundation of Skip Bayless. And everything since then goes right back to that sentiment. It's all right there.
All right. It's been too long on it, but it was worth it. I don't give a fuck. Look, on the other side is Kevin McCarthy. He's that nigga.
Is he?
That's his new name. That nigga Kevin.
Oh.
D-N-K. That nigga Kevin.
Some people would beg to differ.
Nah, they treating him like a nigga. All right, on the other side is.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Rachel, we're going to get into an interview with Aaron Rupar, but we're going to briefly talk about this. McCarthy is, what are we up to, 11 votes now?
11 votes.
For those of you who don't know, Kevin McCarthy, who has been, was the minority leader of the Republicans since 2019, who's the majority leader from 2014 to 2019, you know, when the Republicans fell out of the majority, is seeking the speakership and can't get it.
Yeah.
They're kicking him in his dick. Okay.
They're kicking him everywhere.
They're kicking him. He's got footprints all up and around his ass. The Republicans are in shambles. And because they're in shambles, the government is essentially stopped up on Capitol Hill. Have you been watching this entire fiasco play out?
In and out. Because okay. It is like a Real Housewives episode. And we all know my love for The Real Housewives. Right. I do love to sit back and watch the mess a little bit because I've never seen anything like this. They've said this hasn't happened in 160 plus years. Mm-hmm. So in nobody's lifetime. But it's just so interesting to watch them have absolutely no idea what they're doing. And Kevin McCarthy cannot read the room. He just doesn't get it. 11 times, 11 votes. And each time it has not gone your way. Meanwhile, the Dems are just sitting back, just watching. They got it together.
Yeah.
We're going to wait for y'all to get it together. It's just, I mean, it is bad because they can't get anything done mm-hmm. as a whole, but it does make me smile when I sit back and watch it. And they're giving these passionate speeches about who it is that they think should be, you know, the next speaker. Some names I've never even heard of. And it's just they're so passionate. And it's like, for what? Nothing's going to come of this at the moment. Nothing's happening.
You need 218 votes yes. to become speaker. You have to have that number. You need a majority.
Mm-hmm.
He can't get them. He can't get them because
he won't get them.
The animus in the Republican Party is so deep. They're so unorganized. He's been such a poor leader at this that the schism between him and some members of the Freedom Caucus, which is the far right branch of the Republican Party in the House, just can't fucking get along. He's done everything they've asked him to. They wanted the fucking magnetometers taken out. They wanted the metal detectors taken out of the Capitol building.
So pointless.
After there was an attack on the fucking building 2 years ago, he took them out. He's given them everything that they want. He's given them the taint. He's given them the butt. He's given them the entire thing. He's given them a little nipple. He's given them the licky licky to reach okay. around. And right. they just won't come. Like he's given them everything that he can. We're going to talk to Aaron Rupar about this because, you guys, this has ramifications. Okay, there are liars like Santos that need to be able to continue their lies by being sworn in, and they can't do it because Kevin McCarthy insists on being the next speaker. He's not giving up, and they're not backing down. We're at an impasse, and it is literally the most entertaining nigga shit that has ever happened. You know, I'm not even going to diss us. Why would I diss us? We're not like this. We'll get behind somebody and figure it out. But it's the most entertaining fucking bullshit that I've ever seen before on Capitol Hill. Outside of Bill Clinton's testimony and the Monica Lewinsky thing, he's probably too young. But.
Well, listen, we thought that the fact that the red wave never happened showed that the party was just kind of like out of sorts. But the fact that they're turning on each other with this, it's even worse. And I feel like this isn't it, Van. There's going to be more. Something else is going to happen where, what are the Freedom Caucus?
Freedom Caucus.
The Freedom Caucus puts their foot down about something else. Just because, like, they just want to fuck with
they're
people.
They're emboldened.
Yeah.
It's so funny to watch Kevin McCarthy, like, with that snowman smile on. Y'all know how a snowman smiles, but they still melting. Like you see a snowman, and at first the snowman's all whole. It's like, oh, it's Christmas. Oh, it's Christmas. And then over time, the snowman is just melting, but the smile is still there.
Your mind thinks that.
I'm just saying, like, the smile is still there. Oh, it's Christmas. But he's like a melting, smiling snowman. He's literally dissipating in front of our eyes, but there's nothing he can do about it. And by the way, just to let you guys know, you might think that I'm being a little harsh on Kevin McCarthy in light of some of the things that we've talked about in this podcast today. No, and I'll tell you why. Because smiling snowman, that's him. I'll tell you why. Kevin McCarthy made this bed. He decided that he wanted to go to the furthest of the far right. He decided that he wanted to placate Trump and the insurrectionists. He decided he wanted to cast his lot with election deniers and the furthest fringe of his party. And what did those people give him back? Jack shit. Good on you. I hope that everybody in America is paying attention to what happens when you cast your lot with the Trump people and his far-right MAGA cult, you will lose.
Mm-hmm.
If either you'll be Rudy Giuliani and you will lose your integrity and whatever legacy you have. Either you'll be some of these guys and you'll lose your freedom. Either you'll be some of these old Trump staffers who say they can't get jobs now. You'll lose your employability. Or you'll be scores of other Republican lawmakers.
Yeah.
And you'll lose your election. But casting your lot with them, you will lose. Aaron Rupar is coming on right now. We love Aaron. We're going to get to him. He's going to make sense of this so that, you know, we can do everything we need to do, whatever. Guys, you're all aware of what's going on in Washington right now. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is in the fight of his life. I don't know if you can call it the fight of your life when you just keep getting your ass kicked over and over again. Just before we started recording, I was told that he lost his speaker election, his election for the Speaker of the House, for the 11th time. We've been doing this for 3 days now. We're leaking over into unprecedented times with this. And there are a lot of questions, and we have somebody back on the podcast to help us answer those questions. We have political commentator Aaron Rupar joining us today again on Higher Learning. Aaron, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing all right. Yeah, just before we hopped on, Kevin lost for the 11th time, equaling Bill Russell's record of NBA titles. It was kind of, you know, earlier in the day when he hit seven, I found a nice photo of Tom Brady with the seven rings that I posted on Twitter, you know, just joking that now, you know, Kevin McCarthy was in elite company. And now he hit 11. I don't think any athlete has gone more than 11.
I can't think of one. I mean, that's a good thing for the Thought Warriors out there. Like, as far as championships, I can't think of somebody that would have more than 11 championships. That's OD. Straight up question right now. How is this happening to him?
Well, the short answer is that I think he expected, and a lot of people did, that there would be a big red wave in November. And so if that would have happened and Republicans had a larger majority, then he would have been able to lose more votes within his caucus and still hit the majority threshold that you need to become speaker. But of course, the elections were kind of a dud for Republicans. They only ended up with, I believe it's a 5-seat majority in the House. And so he can only lose those 5 votes. And of course, you have the extreme fringe of the House Republican caucus, people like Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Bob Good, people like that, who just seem like they will never kind of get with the program here. And so as a result, he's just unable to hit that magic number of 218 votes. And the other problem, and this is kind of even more comical in a way, is that he also doesn't necessarily have the votes right now to adjourn the House, because to adjourn, you also need to have half of the, you know, you need a majority of the people voting to adjourn. And so it's almost kind of like this purgatory type state where he doesn't have the votes to become speaker, but he also might not have the votes to actually, you know, take a break. And so we're just voting over and over and over again. And it's unprecedented. I think the last time that we had gone this many ballots deep to choose a speaker was like it was in the 19th century, like the mid 19th century. So we're talking 150 some years ago. And before Tuesday, there hadn't been a House Speaker election that had gone more than one ballot in 100 years. And so if you try and find historical precedents for this, you have to dig pretty deep. But it's made for really entertaining times on C-SPAN. So it's been a big week for C-SPAN, at least.
For sure.
Entertaining times on C-SPAN, but humiliating for Kevin McCarthy. And you wrote an article detailing that. Why is this so humiliating for him and maybe even for the party itself?
Yeah, I wrote about this on my in my newsletter, Public Notice. And the main reason that it's humiliating, I mean, there are a number of reasons, one of which is that McCarthy, expecting that he would win on either the first ballot or an early ballot, actually moved his stuff into the speaker's office. Nancy Pelosi got out of there. You know, Pelosi got out of there, I believe, just a few days ago. And so there's actually video of people moving his stuff into the speaker's office, which obviously looks very presumptuous now that it appears that may not even happen. And so you have that. I mean, you have him basically gallivanting around the country for years, really kind of sucking up and making friends with the most extreme Republicans in the House GOP, thinking that would be enough, you know, to win their support. And in some cases it was. I mean, for instance, Marjorie Taylor Greene has been one of his more staunch supporters, and she's actually alienated a lot of her really far right supporters by backing McCarthy as much as she has. But, you know, when you combine kind of him debasing himself all over the country, you know, campaigning for some really unsavory candidates, with the optics of him moving into this office before apparently he even had the votes, you know, to win the speaker election, you know, it's a really humiliating thing. And it's kind of an open question as to whether, you know, do you resign from Congress after this? How do you kind of come back from, you know, 11 attempts and counting at winning one of these speaker elections and failing? You know, I'm guessing he'll at least stick it out for the next 2 years and then we'll see. But, you know, again, this hasn't happened in anybody who's alive in their lifetime. So it's kind of uncharted waters. But, you know, he was projecting a lot of confidence about this as recently as a week ago. It wasn't clear even back then if he had the votes, but he hasn't been able to strike a deal. And, you know, the other thing that should be mentioned is that it's not like some of these far right House Freedom Caucus members are really standing on any sort of principle right now with this. It seems like they're basically negotiating for chairmanships of committees and kind of, you know, stature for themselves more so than any sort of like policy issues at play. And so, you know, we're kind of seeing this spectacle of democracy in action here where, you know, this is how a functioning democracy should work. You need to line up the votes to become speaker in our system. And so it's good that it's kind of playing out publicly. But you kind of wish, on the other hand, that there were some real principles, you know, sort of hanging in the balance here. And it does kind of feel more like, you know, sort of a petty high school fight, people jockeying for the cool kids' lunch table sort of thing. And so I'm fascinated at this point to see, you know, we're talking here on Thursday, how this is going to resolve. This could drag on into next week at this point, but, you know, there has to be some sort of deal to get a candidate to 218. Otherwise, the House literally cannot function. Members can't be sworn in because the House Speaker swears in the members.
So I saw an interview with Lauren Boebert where she said that he made no attempt to court them for their votes prior to this because he expected a red wave, like you said. My thing is, I want people to understand why they are doing this. Are they doing this just because they haven't been recruited in a passionate enough fashion? I saw that Matt Gaetz was asking for a subcommittee chair, which is never going to happen. I saw that, but what do they want? What would it take for them to, I guess, get on board with McCarthy as speaker? Because I'll say this, this is bad for the right. It is. It's bad for the right. It's bad for the Republicans. They look like they're incapable of governing. They look like their party is in disarray. At the same time, this is holding up the processes and the function of the country. So the question is, if he can't get these people to get on, who are they going to move the fuck on to somebody else? But my main question is, why? You touched on it briefly. Like, why are they doing this? Yeah. And they're kicking him in his nuts in front of everybody.
Yeah. I think actually the premise of your question kind of, you sort of answered it in the question itself, because, like, for instance, Lauren Boebert last night was on MSNBC, which is like kind of a hell freezes over situation for her to be on MSNBC primetime doing an interview. She's been all over Fox. You know, Matt Gaetz has been all over the news. It means people are getting all sorts of attention. And so, you know, that is part of the currency of being in Congress, is having a big platform, people listening to you. You know, some of the McCarthy allies have been going on TV and saying that essentially McCarthy has given them pretty much everything that he can give them, and they're still not compromising or willing to make any sort of a deal here. And so I do think that the amount of attention that some of these members are getting is kind of fueling this. And that's just kind of how politics works, where, of course, you want to talk to Lauren Boebert and get her perspective on why she's holding out and won't support Kevin McCarthy. I will say, as kind of a side note, it was very funny before we hopped on this Zoom. Matt Gaetz actually nominated Donald Trump to be Speaker of the House, which you can do because you don't have to be a member of Congress to become Speaker. But I thought it was pretty notable that he only ended up receiving one vote. He only got Matt Gaetz's vote.
Wow!
You kind of think of Trump as like this huge power broker and, right, the kingmaker of the Republican Party. And, you know, so that would seem to be like one possible solution is that, you know, Trump is still broadly popular among Republicans. You put him up as the speaker candidate, maybe he could get to 218, but nope, he only got that one single vote. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at, where it's just complete chaos. But I do think the fact that people like Boebert are getting kind of these prime TV bookings, you know, raises their stature. But again, you know, it gets back to, I don't really get the sense that there are any sort of principles kind of underpinning this. Like you might want to say that, well, you know, these holdouts really want some sort of border security package, or they want, you know, immigration reform, things like that, or tax reform, but they really don't seem to. It just seems like they want, you know, better positions for themselves on committees. You know, one of the issues that has been a sticking point is, you know, to get not too deep into the weeds here, but it's called motion to vacate the chair, which basically means that any member can bring a motion that comes up for a vote. And if enough people vote for that, then the Speaker of the House is removed. And so it's kind of like, you know, it's a clause that basically allows members to remove the Speaker at any time. And this forced John Boehner out 7 years ago when he left as Speaker and stepped down. And so McCarthy has been holding out to try to keep that to a 5-vote threshold, which would mean that you would need 5 members of the House GOP to bring a motion that could basically strip him of his job. But some of these members, like Boebert, want it to be just a 1-member threshold where any member of the House.
So at any time somebody could bring a motion and then cause a vote for him to essentially be impeached removed as the Speaker of, like, yes, removed as the Speaker of the House, which would make him such a weak Speaker, which he's always already going to be anyway, that there's no way that he could ever go along with that, right?
Right. I mean, there's been reporting today that actually he is now caving on the 1-vote thing because, you know, it seems like, you know, the 1-member threshold for this, because it seems like, you know, maybe that's one of the last concessions that he can possibly make. But, you know, the other thing that I'll put out there is that, you know, some of the more moderate House Republicans have been talking today about possibly striking some sort of deal with Democrats where you basically forget about these 20 far right House Freedom Caucus members, kind of just let them do their thing. But if you could identify, you know, 20 to 30 Democrats who, you know, maybe you could do something where the balance of power on these committees is 50-50 instead of Republicans having a majority, or you could offer some sort of concessions to Democrats to get them to go along either with McCarthy or another, you know, kind of more moderate candidate. Probably wouldn't be McCarthy, probably, you know, someone who didn't vote in 2021 to overturn the election results. but someone who would be amenable both to Republicans and Democrats while you make some concessions to Democrats to get them to go along. So to me, that seems like, you know, one path out of this. Another is that these members just get tired and, you know, want to carry on with the business of the House. I mean, a lot of these members have their families in D.C., you know, for their, you know, for when they're sworn in, for the photo ops and just the festivities surrounding being sworn into office. And we're on day 3 of this now. So something will give eventually, but that's something to kind of keep your eye on as we get further into this, the possibility that there is some sort of really unprecedented type of deal where you'd have Republicans and Democrats coming together on some sort of compromise candidate and some concessions being offered to Democrats to get them to go along with that.
You mentioned Gates voting for Trump. Now, we know that Trump is supporting Kevin McCarthy, and these people who are, you know, holding it up and that are against him, I say these people, these Congress people who are holding up the vote are Trump supporters. What does this say about Trump and his influence over the party? And does this even speak or maybe give us insight into what's to happen in 2024?
I don't think I would go that far because this is sort of a weird situation where the idea of him being Speaker when you're not even a member of Congress, and obviously he wasn't known as being some sort of like master legislative tactician, it's kind of a weird idea in and of itself. And so I wouldn't go as far as to say that this reflects, you know, kind of his, you know, a real fading of his star in any sort of serious sense. Although I will say, you know, to kind of back up, you know, to kind of play the other side of that a little bit, that, you know, another notable thing was yesterday Trump released a statement on Truth Social endorsing McCarthy and basically urging, you know, members to vote for him. And it didn't swing a single vote. It ended up still being the same 20 people against Trump, against McCarthy that there have been all along here. So, yeah, I mean, I guess in that sense, the fact that people don't really seem to be listening to his endorsements, you know, it's kind of problematic for him. But, you know, ultimately, it's going to come down to the primary voters in the Republican presidential primary that are going to make the decision as to whether or not, you know, Trump is kind of removed from the scene, you know, against his will in terms of, you know, if Ron DeSantis beats him or Glenn Youngkin or another candidate beats him. Trump has never been, you know, extremely popular with power brokers in the Republican Party. You know, until he became president, people kind of had to make peace with him. But I wouldn't necessarily go as far as to say that the fact that he's not really gaining traction as a speaker candidate is any sort of major indictment of him. But I will say, you know, the fact that he made this endorsement, people didn't listen to it. You know, it is notable because you would think that if these members are really afraid of him, they would listen to him. But in this case, they seem to basically, you know, take that statement on Truth Social and throw it in the rubbish bin, basically.
Hakeem Jeffries is the minority leader. This is funny. he's black. He's the minority leader. Funny. Anyway, Hakeem Jeffries is the minority leader. He's got 212 votes. Obviously, it is incredibly unlikely that there's any path to him becoming Speaker of the House. However, the Democrats are together. They are unanimous in voting for Hakeem Jeffries. I do want to ask you what this means for the left. Do you think that this shows such a fracture in the Republican Party that there is a way for the left to capitalize on this? Is there a way to build on this? What message does this send to the American people? When I say the American people, I mean the American people that would listen to a sensible message. What's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that the contrast between what we're seeing now and what we saw in 2021, when Democrats had basically the same margin of majority that Republicans now have. I think it was, you know, I think Democrats had a 4-vote majority and Republicans currently have a 5-vote majority. So very similar. And every single Democrat voted, I believe, I'd have to go back and look, but it, you know, it wasn't 4. It was enough voted for Nancy Pelosi to get her over the finish line as speaker. And it really wasn't, there wasn't any drama involved in that at all. And so that, you know, does show, and that continues to this current day, that Democrats are much more united and much more, you know, they're much more governable in that sense than Republicans are these days. You know, we are a ways out at this point from the next election. And so I do think that voters tend to have pretty short memories and attention span. So, you know, I don't know at this point, you know, if 18 months from now, you know, when the campaign really heats up for 2024, if people will still be thinking about this. But, you know, I definitely think that it shows that you have a far right fringe of the Republican Party that is mostly about posturing and kind of getting Fox News hits and going on Newsmax. And, you know, whether that's owning the libs or owning Kevin McCarthy, you know, they're really about kind of the spectacle of posturing and being on TV and getting attention. And that's not a new thing. But again, I think that in previous periods where Republicans have had a House majority, they've had enough of a cushion where that fringe hasn't been empowered in the way they are right now. And so, yeah, I mean, the problem is that in a lot of these districts where you have these really stubborn House Republicans, they're very safe seats. And so I don't really know how, like with a Bob Good or Matt Gaetz, I mean, these are people who are winning their elections by, you know, 20 to 30 point margins. Lauren Boebert is an interesting case because she just won her election a couple months ago by like 300 votes. So, you know, the fact that she, I thought that was kind of one of the humorous aspects of her going on TV and kind of pretending to be this like really, you know, like this thought leader in the Republican Party is that, you know, in a very red area of Colorado, she barely hung on in November. And so she's kind of a unique case where her district is swingy enough where, you know, she's going to definitely be a target in 2024 for the Democratic Party to possibly take that seat. But you're always going to have this fringe on the right, you know, people from deep red states who really like to grandstand and kind of get this sort of attention for themselves. And so, you know, I hope voters are paying attention to that. I mean, I do think that you see the chaos that's happening and you kind of shake your head at the fact that voters felt like it was a decent idea to give Republicans control of the chamber because they can't even keep it together enough to get a speaker in place and to get sworn in, let alone to pass any sort of legislation that's actually going to benefit people. And so we're just going to have to endure this for, you know, a couple of years at this point. But I do hope that when 2024 rolls around, voters do remember this and maybe keep this in mind before they pull the lever for someone like Boebert again.
Last question for me. If not Kevin McCarthy, who do you think is taking that role? I know everyone's kind of talking about Steve Scalise. I'm not sure who else is.
Yeah, you know, that's been one of, because we're 11 ballots deep and Scalise has not received a single vote. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of the presumptive sort of second in command. He's been very loyal to McCarthy. And so I think that's part of it. You know, this Byron Donalds guy kind of came out of nowhere yesterday
BD.
As the alternative. And like, I mean, I had heard of him in the sense that I watch a lot of Fox News and he's on Fox all the time. He's one of the members. And I think that's part of the reason that he became kind of popular among Republicans is because he's good on TV. He goes on Fox. He kind of has that platform for himself. But he's kind of an unknown guy. And then today there's this Kevin Hearn guy from Oklahoma who's been put out there as a nominee and gotten some votes. But they don't really seem like serious contenders to get the 218 for me. So it could be someone like Scalise. It could be someone with a lower profile who maybe isn't quite as divisive because Scalise was pretty deep in a lot of the election denialism and the big lie stuff. And so I think that makes him radioactive for any Democrats. But, you know, that really is kind of an open question. And if I had to kind of wager on at this point, I would say that maybe it would be someone like Scalise who I think is viewed as being a little bit more of a serious person than McCarthy is. But you know, it really could be someone that we're not even thinking about at this point who's known to colleagues in the House. I mean, there are over 400 members. And for instance, like this Kevin Hearn guy, I mean, I follow politics for a living today, but he was first sworn into office in 2019. He's in Oklahoma. Like he hasn't really done anything major in the House. And so, you know, you see some of these people whose names come up for speaker and it's like, I don't even know who this is, you know? And so it's kind of a weird thing with the House when you have that many members. But I guess if I did have to, you know, it's kind of boring, but I guess if I did have to wager on at this point, I would probably put my money on Scalise being the most likely person if it's not going to be McCarthy. But I still think ultimately probably the most likely outcome is McCarthy making some sort of deal with the far right fringe to get those people on board, because you just can't keep going on like this. I mean, they might have to adjourn for the weekend or something, but at some point people are just going to have to sleep. You know what I mean? Like they're still there voting. They've been there now for, you know, like 10 hours today, and it just can't go on overnight. So there has to be some way out, but it'll be a really interesting and amazing story if they can't find a way out and they just keep voting forever. And I guess they just have to move in on the House floor and get their sleeping bags and, you know, and set up residence yeah. there.
It's tough. Aaron Rupar. He is at AT Rupar. That's at ATRUPAR on Twitter. Covering U.S. politics and media, and a Snapstream expert.
That's right. That's what I used to post all the little video clips.
Snapstream. I see it. I'm like, well, how did he get that? I'm like, how does he get?
I'm going to have to. Wow, this is great. I'm actually going to send the end of this podcast to Snapstream because I'm a brand ambassador for them. So like getting this sort of shout out, that's great for them. No, it really is a good product. It's the video service, and it's actually used by a lot of sports teams and ESPN too, because it basically records TV and allows you to post it onto social media very quickly and easily.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's really helped me build up my Twitter account, and it's been huge this week as I'm following all the developments on the House floor and kind of getting little clips out for people.
I want to use Snapstream.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now.
Telling you, Snapstream. I'm like, how does he get the stuff?
You're a great ambassador.
I'm recording this shit off my TV.
Ask and Bill post- about it. I'm surprised Bill Simmons hasn't already ponied up for Snapstream for you guys.
Get on it, Bill.
All right, Aaron, thank you for joining us today on Higher Learning, brother. We will check back in with you to try to get some resolution to this comedy of errors that is American politics.
My pleasure, anytime.
All right, you guys. This is a long-ass podcast. Look, we shout out to Aaron Rupar, by the way. And shout out to Snapstream. Doing a good job.
Yes.
Shout out to Snapstream. We realized this pod is long. We did not pod on Monday. A lot of stuff happened. And to just be frank with you, it's a hell of a news week.
Yeah, it's a great news week. So should we...
Well, not a great news week.
Interesting news week. Yes, not all the news is great.
We even get to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch's family, Doctor Strange.
Well, nothing's happening there.
Nothing's happening there.
Angela Bassett's
kid.
But like we've done a lot of talking, we should turn it over to the Thought Warriors and do mailbag.
Right. Mailbag.
You know what I mean? Like let's give them their moment.
Mailbag time. Time to read your letters, and then we'll reply to them. Oh. It's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in.
First mailbag question is from Bird Noah. He's put this one in the mailbag a few times, and I think it's a good question. So if you could only listen to music from one decade, what would you choose?
The 90s. Easy. Now, that's not me saying that. Hold on, Rachel. I'm not thinking.
The 90s is good.
That's not me saying that the best music comes from the 90s. No. That's clearly not true.
But if that's all you got,
yeah,
starting from the beginning of the 90s, because that covers, like, the NWA era, but then you get all the way to the ends, and that's like Puff Daddy and the Family.
It would be the 90s.
That's tough. No, because that's tough.
But you got to think about this now, because the 70s is
The 70s was my first thought.
Yeah.
But because whatever we do, it has to have Michael.
Okay. Well, then you want the 80s.
No, but the 90s covers them.
The 90s, you got with Michael, you got Dangerous and you got History.
It covers them.
With the 80s, you got Thriller and Bad. If it's about Michael,
but it's
you
not all about. And I know, you have Prince.
You got Prince in the 90s?
You do have Prince in the 90s. The 90s is good, but I'm almost gearing to the 70s.
Okay.
Because I just want some more Motown.
You want Stevie Wonder?
I want Motown in there.
Well, Motown is more like the 60s, though.
But it goes into the 70s.
It's true.
Remember, because they start doing, like, even the temps change into the 70s.
Afros and shit. Yeah, no, that's true. It's true.
And you got the disco era.
I love disco.
So, like, if he picks the 90s, I got to go with the 70s.
How do you like it? You ever heard that song? How do you like it? Dun, 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 dun. More, more, more. How do you like it? How do you like it? How do you like it? You like that song?
Yeah, I love that song.
That's a great song.
Oh, man. Okay, so if I do the 70s, that means I get some of the Jackson 5. I'll be there.
The only thing from the 70s I'm really missing is, well, it's a couple of things, because the 70s is great.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
I'm missing Stevie Wonder, which I love. I'm missing Stevie Wonder, which I love from the 70s. And then I'm missing Zeppelin and some other people like that. You know what I'm saying?
Fleetwood Mac.
It's great. The 70s is the best decade of music to me.
However, Al Green was big in the 70s.
If it's going to be though, if it's going to be just like one decade, if you're telling me, just I'm gonna have to listen to only one decade. It's gonna be the 90s, man.
That's fine.
It's definitely gonna be the 90s.
It's not bad. Yeah. It made me think. That's a great question.
All right, next one is from Icy Introvert Mariah. She or he asks, what do you find funny that other people don't?
What do I find funny that other people don't?
I have something.
Of course you do. Is it inappropriate?
No, not at all. Okay.
What?
There's this movie called Looper.
I love Looper. The kid is hilarious. Is it the kid?
Okay, it's about the kid. Okay, so I'm so surprised that you've seen Looper.
I'm obsessed with that kid.
Okay.
That movie.
So there's a movie called Looper, okay? In the movie is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Shout out to Rian Johnson, by the way. Glass Onion was fantastic.
It was really good.
Is Joseph Gordon-Levitt is fucking Bruce.
I don't know why I've seen Looper.
Is Bruce Willis. Looper's, I love
it.
Looper,
it was really good.
And there's a kid in the movie, right?
Fantastic.
Okay, so the kid in the movie is good. He's definitely good. But, like, the kid, at one point, you know, the kid can really, like, how can I explain this? The kid has, like,
powers.
He's got powers. Everybody in the movie, it's like a time in where everybody has, like, a little telekinesis.
And they time jump in the movie, right?
Yeah, they time jump because...
They loop.
Well, yes. Well, they go backwards.
Yeah.
No? Wait a minute.
No, so Bruce is forward.
Bruce
but
is
he comes
forwards.
Back.
Bruce comes back because, like, he is Bruce.
Yes.
And Bruce is trying to close his loop.
Spoiler, but whatever. It's been out too long.
So it's Looper, whatever. And so he meets Emily Blunt. She has his son, and he's really strong with telekinesis.
And yes.
And he ends up becoming
and he's a key to
the whole thing.
Things that could happen
Looper's
in the world.
Really great.
Yes. Okay.
And for some reason, like, you know, you don't know what's wrong with him. Emily Blunt goes to, like, get in the safe and blah, 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 blah. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, he witnesses the kid's powers. And he witnesses the kid's powers. And he says,
what made you think
the kid, he lifts Garrett Dillahunt up into the top and he rips him apart and he fucking destroys the house. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character goes, what is he, some kind of TK freak? And I don't know why.
What made you think of that?
Because it's something that has bothered Kalika for years. It used to bother her all the time. It used to bother her back in the day. It's like, it'd be like, what is it? What is he? What is he, some kind of TK freak? What is he, some kind of TK freak? And I'll be like, what? And I remember we were in the movies, and he said that, and I burst into laughter. And then went to a friend's house, and I played that part for him, and they were like, and they didn't laugh. Nobody ever laughs because it's not funny. I don't know why. It's like, it's just fucking hysterical to me. He's so scared. What is he? Some kind of TK freak? It's like fucking hilarious to me.
I can't think of one. I know there's one. I'm sure there's something that I have laughed at that nobody else laughed.
I'm trying to find it right now.
That's a good movie, though. That was a good one. I love that movie.
Looper TK freak is what I looked up. I don't know why.
Did it pop up?
To me. No.
No, because nobody else finds it funny.
Nobody thinks it's funny, bro. That shit is funny to me, dog. That shit is hilarious to me. He's like, a bloody telekinesis scene. Here it is right here. Let me see. And then he, because the kid falls down the stairs. And then he kills Gary Delahunt. It's just so funny. What is he, some TK freak? Anyway, Donnie, what's the next one?
All right, next one is kind of long, but it's pretty good too, I think. I'm Your Huckleberry asks, my first mailbag question. Van and Big Rach, y'all love football like me. With the D. Hamlin life-threatening injury and my quarterback Tua getting 3 concussions in a season, this is the first time I've questioned young men, especially young Black men, playing football in high school and junior high. They don't have the ability to immediately respond to the player medical needs like the NFL. So the question is, if you had a son, would you let him play football?
No. Brian and I have talked about this. No, I wouldn't. And I know I'm a hypocrite. I love the game. I watch the game. I've worked in it before. But no, I think the risks are too great. Greater than the love. So I just wouldn't want to subject my child to that. At least as long as I could control it, right? If I go to college and he walks on a team, you know, I don't know how much control I have over that. But as long as I can, I think that you parents are influential in their kids, like in the upbringing as far as like what sports they put them in. I wouldn't put him in Pop Warner or anything like that. He would have to discover the love of it on his own.
Yes. I would. Yes, I would.
Why?
I would limit the amount of football. I don't think you're playing. I think you're playing touch probably until the 8th or 9th grade. Just limit the amount of hits.
8th or 9th grade, they play tackle in junior high.
They play tackle at 7 years old. So, but what I'm saying is, my son wouldn't play.
Where do they play touch in 8th grade?
Well, they have flag football leagues. They have.
Oh, so you're gonna have them do flag football?
Yeah. I say flag, when I say touch, I mean flag.
Oh.
I would say I would have them in.
So PE.
Well, no. I mean, they're competitive. No. 7-on-7. Yeah. So I would have them probably doing that. Now, if he's probably me, he's going to be a big boy, that he might come in behind in some lineman skills or something like that. I can't see having a bunch of hits on somebody at 11, 12, 13 years old. We'll have to start in high school for me, but I couldn't see keeping him off the field if he wanted to play. I mean, it's just too much. I just got to be real with you. It's just kind of like, too much a part of just how we grew up. I mean, if you would want to play, I would let him play. Mm. If my daughter wanted to play, I would let her play. Quarterback Princess, Holly Hunt movie. Look it up. You ever seen it?
Come on,
it's a good movie. But no, I would let him play. I would just make sure that it was as safe as possible, and make sure that we cut down on the amount of hits that he's going to have to take in his life.
Side note, I feel like because I told you I saw Looper, you think that you might be lucky with another one. You know,
can't
it's
believe
like
you've seen it.
Out of every 10 movies, I might get one. So you threw in quarterback princess is like, come on, let's go back to what we know.
Nobody has seen quarterback princess. But I'll tell you one thing though. I'm so fucking shocked that you've seen Looper.
I don't know why I watched it. It wasn't even on a plane. I don't know why I saw it.
Okay. It's Helen Hunt in Quarterback Princess. Is that what I said?
No, you said Holly Hunt.
It's not Holly. It's Helen Hunt in Quarterback Princess. She plays quarterback for her high school team. Quarterback Princess. I like that shit. Anyway, Donnie, we got anything else?
We got one more. We can do it real quick if y'all want. Okay. Dub City 27 asks, what's the greatest album from your city / state?
Oh, that's easy.
What is yours?
From my state? 400 Degrees.
I know, right?
Yeah, Juvenile.
I'm going to go with Mama's Gun, Erykah Badu.
From all of Texas.
That album, it's amazing. Is incredible.
I'm just trying to see.
Why does it have to be rap?
I'm not saying it has to be rap. I'm saying that's better than all Beyonce shit.
Oh, but see, I'm not in the Beehive. Beyonce didn't even cross my mind.
By the way, I'm not saying that you're not right. I'm just saying Texas is so big.
It's so big.
But you know what?
And I think you have a lot of options in Louisiana. I agree with 400.
Shit ton of
I agree with 400
all
Degrees.
The jazz, all the...
But Mama's Gun is incredible.
Okay, let's look this up. Musical artists.
I thought Come Away With Me, Norah Jones, is a really great, fantastic album as well.
I'm being
from Texas.
I'm being toxic.
Because Van wants me to pick a man.
What the fuck? Did I bring up a man? I said Beyonce. It's so many people, though. It's so many people. Texas got... No, you're right. But I would probably have to... But just if you ask me, knee jerk, my favorite, because it's your favorite. So my favorite, 400 Degrees.
400 Who's degrees. Your knee jerk Texas, then?
Bruh. I'm not going to lie, bruh. My knee jerk Texas is riding dirty at UGK, bro. Is that UGK, dog? I'm
gonna
be honest with you, bro.
A man.
You know, hold on, bro. If you're talking about you talking about this right here, hold on for a second. I know you know this shit. You can't tell me about this shit. Pimp C, bitch. So what the fuck is up?
Oh, rest in peace, Pimp C.
Rest in peace, Pimp C.
Let it take us out, Donnie.
You would think I was lying. They did think he was lying, but he was telling the truth. There was. Actually, he said Jeezy was lying. Anyway, unexpected ally of the week?
Delta Airlines. Delta Airlines will be offering free Wi-Fi on their flights. I get very annoyed by the fact that you pay all that money for a flight and then you got to pay an additional $20. Sometimes if it's like cross-country, it could be $30 for your internet. And Delta is doing the right thing in 2023 and giving it to us for free.
Mine is you people on Instagram, Twitter, social media that bonded together to raise that much money for Damar Hamlin's, Chasing M's Foundation and, Jomi with a very funny tweet, and just everyone who, you know, put their humanity on display. I was moved and incredibly inspired. I'm exhausted at the end of this podcast.
It's been 2.5 hours.
Fuck it. Give them a lot. We got a lot to
give
them.
We are making up. We gave them, the last podcast we did in 2022 was a jam-packed episode. We gave y'all a lot. When other people were taking vacations, we were in the studio.
Hell yeah.
And by that, I mean the Zoom podcasting.
Yep.
This is the first podcast of the new year, and we give you 2.5 hours.
Hell
now,
yeah.
I can't say we're going to do that every single podcast, but it just lets you know we're not playing in 2023.
No, we're not fucking around. We'll smack
more
the
to
fuck.
Come.
More to come.
We got some great guests coming up this month.
Yep. We got Barack Obama coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got let's see who we got. We got coming up. We got Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg.
We got
Oprah. Oprah, did Oprah say?
I think we're still waiting on Oprah to confirm, but it's looking good.
Looking good for Oprah. Fuck Rihanna. Fuck. Shit, we got mad people coming on, man. We got so many people coming on. Donnie, who are some of the other people we got coming on the podcast? Jay-Z?
I think Allison is talking to Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that was a hard get, but we got some good. I mean, we got a lot of feedback from him. We might have to kind of
send the works.
We might have to go to we'll him see. Or do him over Zoom. We got Michael.
Donnie.
Allison's really good at her job.
Elton She's John. Good. We got Janice Joplin. We got coming on the podcast. You know what I'm saying? Just got a lot of people, man. A lot of people. Just, you know, you never know who's gonna pop up on this bitch. We might get taking the caps off, but to not stop learning, I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel and Lindsay. Bye, guys. I really thought Donnie was gonna say Michael Jordan. And I was like, we're gonna get dead. Do you curve off? Talking about murder.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.